Following are comments on William Shakespeare's Macbeth, Act 3. To be thus is nothing but to be safely thus. Macbeth, recognizing that his plans require the death of Banquo and his son Fleance, contracts with two malcontents to kill them. In Act 3, Scene 1, Banquo's ambition appears only as distrustful speculation about Macbeth, as he says, quote unquote, "Thou hast it now, King, Cawdor, Glamis, all, as the weird women promised, and I fear thou playedst most foully for it. Yet it was said it should not stand in thy posterity." Act 3, Scene 1, Lines 1 through 4. Immediately after these reflections, Banquo finds himself invited to dinner by Macbeth and his queen. How can he refuse? It would look suspicious. The new king sums up his goal to himself, quote unquote, "To be thus is nothing, but to be safely thus." Act 3, Scene 1, Line 48. Banquo's continued existence is unbearable. If the witches are correct about his progeny inheriting the throne of Scotland, Macbeth's efforts are for naught. Quote unquote, "For Banquo's issue have I filed my mind. For them, the gracious Duncan, have I murdered." Act 3, Scene 1, Lines 65 through 66. Though but briefly on his throne, Macbeth is already confronting the hollow ruin of himself that he will soon become. The witches promised him only, quote unquote, "a barren scepter." Act 3, Scene 1, Line 62. "That scepter," he adds, "comes at the cost of his soul, the, quote unquote, "eternal jewel, possessed by even the humblest of people." Act 3, Scene 1, Line 68. As Macbeth is ruminating in this unhappy way, in come the hired assassins who will try to kill Banquo and Fleance. He employs some bullying, class-saturated rhetoric to motivate them, proclaiming at one point, quote unquote, "Aye, in the catalogue ye go for men, as hounds and greyhounds, mongrels, spaniels, curs, shuffs, water rugs, and demi-wolves are clept, all by the name of dogs." Act 3, Scene 1, Lines 92 through 95. Insults aside, the men seem ready enough to go through with the murderous assignment Macbeth has given them. The play as a whole deals with the relationship between spiritual error and its material and psychological consequences, and already, here in Act 3, Scene 1, we can register a change from an initially pensive Macbeth to Macbeth 2.0. This new version of the man in Act 3, Scene 1, is a hardened, resolute, ruthless killer. His pitiless conduct is the flip side of the acedia, or spiritual apathy, that will overtake him as the play's violent action winds to a close. "Come, sealing night, scarf up the tender eye of pitiful day." The royal couple have been shaken by terrible dreams, but Macbeth is determined to eliminate Banquo and Fleance as sources of anxiety and danger to his throne. In Act 3, Scene 2, an intimate conversation between Macbeth and Lady Macbeth brings home both the psychological disturbance caused by what they've done and their determination to quell such effects and govern in security. Lady Macbeth at first issues the despairing reflection, quote unquote, "'Tis safer to be that which we destroy than by destruction dwell in doubtful joy." Act 3, Scene 2, Lines 6 through 7. Even so, she tries to buck up Macbeth's spirits, saying, quote unquote, "Things without all remedy should be without regard. What's done is done." Act 3, Scene 2, Lines 11 through 12. Ah, but it's never so simple as that. Macbeth's thoughts betray a similar mixture of self-defeating melancholia and earnest resolutions for better times. The king says, quote unquote, "But let the frame of things disjoint, both the worlds suffer, ere we will eat our meal in fear and sleep in the affliction of these terrible dreams that shake us nightly." Act 3, Scene 2, lines 16 through 19. Macbeth admits the awful toll that Duncan's murder has already exacted, but he is determined to stay on the path that he and Lady Macbeth have chosen. "Until Banquo is dealt with," says the king, quote unquote, "we must lave our honors in these flattering streams and make our faces vizards to our hearts, disguising what they are." Act 3, Scene 2, lines 31 through 34. "But the need to keep up this division between being and seeming will never diminish. It will tear Lady Macbeth apart and alienate Macbeth from her and from his life." "What's to be done?" asks Lady Macbeth. Act 3, Scene 2, line 43. She seems to suspect that Macbeth will have Banquo killed, but he keeps this partly to himself. Why, we might ask, since she is already complicit in the worst that Macbeth has done. The new king seems to be trying to spare his queen's feelings. Yes, she is as guilty as he is, but he wants to spare her the distress of continuing to be reminded of it. Still, the king keeps his plans to himself, plans that entail the murder of Banquo and Fleance. Quote unquote, "Come, sealing night, scarf up the tender eye of pitiful day, and with thy bloody and invisible hand, cancel and tear to pieces that great bond which keeps me pale." Act 3, Scene 2, lines 45 through 49. The Norton editors identify Shakespeare's metaphor in "Come, Sealing Night," spelled S-E-E-L-I-N-G, as referring to the practice of sewing a hawk's eyes shut so that it will be easier to train. In keeping with this metaphor, then, the rational, humane, compassionate eye of daytime must be sewn shut to open up the terror-laced opportunities of the night. One bad deed calls for another. It's the only way forward now. As Act 3, Scene 2 comes to an end, Macbeth still doesn't realize that no matter how much strategic blood he sheds, no security will ever emerge, either for him or for his, quote-unquote, partner of greatness, Lady Macbeth. "Fly, good Fleance, fly, fly, fly!" As Macbeth's three assassins cut down Banquo, he desperately tells his son Fleance to escape. In Act 3, Scene 3, three murderers hack Banquo to death, but Fleance escapes as his father encourages him, quote unquote, "Fly, good Fleance, fly, fly, fly." Act 3, Scene 3, line 20. Ironically, his escape is facilitated by one of the murderers' decision to put out his torch as he fights with Banquo. It seems that the night spirit that Macbeth invoked in Act 3, Scene 2 as his benefactor has instead allowed Fleance to get away. "Never shake thy gory locks at me." Macbeth receives the assassin's bad news, and then is so unsettled by the grisly ghost of the slain Banquo that a much-anticipated dinner banquet is ruined, and Lady Macbeth must usher the guests out the door. In Act 3, Scene 4, the banquet scene is the play's climax. Banquo's gore-spattered ghost appears during the feast that Macbeth and his queen are hosting to normalize their reign. He takes his seat in Macbeth's place of honor after the first murderer privately delivers the bad news that while Banquo is dead, Fleance escaped. Graciousness reigns at the table until Macbeth declares that there's no place for him to sit, and moments later he blurts out to what the guests are bound to perceive as mere vacancy, quote unquote, "Thou canst not say I did it. Never shake thy gory locks at me." Act 3, Scene 3, lines 50 through 51. Lady Macbeth is shocked, but privately contemptuous of her husband's outburst, saying to him, quote unquote, "When all's done, you look but on a stool." Act 3, Scene 3, lines 68 through 69. She is angry in part because Macbeth has completely ruined this medieval photo op attempt at normalizing his ill-begun reign. But all that aside, there sits Banquo. Whether depending on the director's choice, we see Banquo as Macbeth does, or we see an empty chair as his guests do, we will in any case feel the eerie presence of the once trusted colleague whom the wicked king has killed. Unlike the VIP guests, we know what Macbeth and his wife have done. This banquet scene undoes Macbeth's attempt to play the Machiavel. His behavior rattles everyone, including Lady Macbeth. Macbeth's strange words witness the time's weirdness. Quote unquote, "The times has been that when the brains were out, the man would die, and there an end, but now they rise again." Act 3, Scene 4, lines 80 through 82. Macbeth is a haunted man. How to deal with this? Lady Macbeth orders the guests to exit. Macbeth determines to find out the worst and thereby discover how to maintain his power, declaring, quote unquote, "I will, ellipsis, to the weird sisters. More they shall speak, for now I am bent to know by the worst means the worst." Act 3, Scene 4, lines 135 through 137. At this point, the king probably still believes in the witches as authoritative sources of prophecy since, after all, neither Fleance's escape nor Banquo's appearance as a ghost invalidates what they have predicted for Macbeth. He had most likely thought that he was done with them, but now realizes that cannot be. Well, there's no point turning back now. As Macbeth says, quote unquote, "I am in blood stepped in so far that should I wade no more, returning were as tedious as go o'er." Act 3, Scene 4, lines 138 through 140. That's similar to Richard III's summation, quote unquote, "I am in so far in blood that sin will pluck on sin. Tear falling pity dwells not in this eye." Norton Tragedies, Richard III, Act 4, Scene 2, lines 64 through 67. As Act 3, Scene 4 winds down, the hour for sensitive reflection or any thought of repentance is long past. Macbeth must now act so quickly that there's no time left to analyze his actions in advance. As quickly as the mind can conceive, the thing must be done. As he says, quote unquote, "Strange things I have in head that will to hand, which must be acted ere they may be scanned." Act 3, Scene 4, lines 141 through 142. You all know security is mortal's chiefest enemy. Hecate, Queen of Night, upbraids the witches for not reporting to her about Macbeth, but she's more than up to the task of assisting in his destruction. In Act 3, Scene 5, which many textual scholars believe was written not by Shakespeare but by a collaborator, Thomas Middleton, Hecate, Queen of the Night, upbraids the witches for not apprising her of their work with Macbeth. She categorizes the man as no more than, quote unquote, "a wayward son, spiteful and wrathful, who, as others do, loves for his own ends, not for you." Act 3, Scene 5, lines 11 through 13. What Hecate appears to mean is that Macbeth does not do evil for its own sake. He's no purist, just a selfish fellow casting here and there for shortcuts. How dreary! Einstein wrote in one of his essays that many people who enter the temple of science profane it. The same apparently goes for the temple of wickedness. Queen Hecate mocks human pretensions to permanence and safety, saying, quote unquote, "You all know security is mortal's chiefest enemy." Act 3, Scene 5, lines 32 through 33. As the Norton gloss points out, quote unquote, "security," in Hecate's context, means overconfidence, which translates easily enough to something like hubris or arrogance. But it may also mean being sure of what you've gained, so as to capture the sense of what characters like Macbeth and Richard III tell us they still seek once they've stolen what they wanted. The right valiant Banquo walked too late. Lennox laces his words with irony in speaking with another Scottish lord, but the two men come round to stating the truth about what's happening in Macbeth's Scotland and what their comrades are planning to do about it. In Act 3, Scene 6, Lennox repeats ironically the official state-sponsored versions, so to speak, of events that Macbeth's regime has been pumping out, and we hear that Malcolm has found refuge with England's King Edward the Confessor. Macduff, who avoided Macbeth's disastrous dinner, has followed Malcolm to England to seek military help against Macbeth. The scene ends with both Lennox and the Scottish lord, whom he addresses, as we say, on the same page, at least to each other in Macbeth the tyrant's authoritarian Scotland. The two can speak the truth. And that's where we leave things at the end of the third act. Thanks for listening. This audio lecture was recorded on Sunday, June 29th, 2025. The foregoing material is copyright 2025 by Alfred J. Drake. For quotations, I have relied on the Norton Shakespeare's third edition, four-volume, genre-based format.